Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. Whitewatersc.ie. Kildare
KFM. Yeah, welcome back to the programme. Of course, keep your messages coming in to us to the usual sources, 0833 97 97 97. Now, you will have heard over the last 24 hours about the new research carried out by Barnardos. Parents are worried about meeting back-to-school costs this year. A survey of more than 1,000 parents showed they find themselves under considerable financial pressure due to the rising cost of living. The survey found that the basic cost of sending a child to school in 2022 remains substantial across primary and second level. The average cost of the basics needed for a fourth class pupil, €424. Meanwhile, €814 is required for first year secondary students, and it costs €722 to send fifth year students back to school. To get some reaction and comment on this, I'm joined on the line now by Michael Gillespie. He's General Secretary of the Teachers Union of Ireland. Michael, good morning and welcome to the programme again.
Good morning.
Those figures, as has been commented on throughout the last 24 hours, are extortionate in the cost of living crisis that we have. Parents are really, really struggling, and they're feeling the pinch on their pockets now.
Yes, I mean, I can understand why parents would be very worried about these costs. The TUI has always believed that education should be free. So, you know, both primary and secondary should be fully free, including books and all the needs. Unfortunately, we're in a country where we depend on a huge amount of volunteerism. Teachers and parents spend their time fundraising. As was said by Barnardo, there's voluntary contributions. In a lot of the schools where our members are, voluntary contributions can't be made because, you know, they're in DESH areas. So again, very, very unfair, unequal. And we believe all students should be treated equally and should have a right to a free education. And that means fully free, you know, a state-provided service. Unfortunately, these prices, more than likely, with the cost of living crisis, are only going to go one way, and that's up because of the knock-on effect of that inflation will have. So I think it's time that all these costs are met by the state. And it's a fixed cost that's coming out of everybody's household. So if you've got a secondary school student and we're talking €700-800 to return to school, you know, that is a huge cost for one family, not maybe as big a cost to another family. So again, it's a fixed cost, not a progressive cost. And it caused different effects on different families and different stresses and strains.
Now, the government has increased the back-to-school allowance this year by €100 to reduce the pressures on families. And while Barnardos welcomed that, they echo what you're saying there, that they want plans to be set out to provide what's been described as a genuinely free school system for all children. Let's talk about those voluntary contributions, because there might be some people listening here who have to pay those voluntary contributions to the schools, and they'd say that the onus is on the schools to just pull them. Why do we have to pay them? And I'm sure your response would be it's to meet the shortfall of funding that schools don't get from the state.
Yes, it's to meet the shortfall in some schools, but unfortunately an awful lot of schools don't have the option to charge. As I said, most DESH schools are totally dependent on state funding, community schools totally dependent on. So a lot of schools that are charging it more than likely do have maybe better off parents, but again, even in those schools there are parents that would be under pressure to meet the cost of those voluntary contributions, which is very, very tough. As we're in a cost of living crisis, everybody is experiencing more and more the pressures of the cost of living. This is not like the recession we had 10 years ago, because the cost of living is now about basic commodities, the fuels to go to work, heating costs, you know, basic food is going up, which we haven't seen in a long, long time. So these cost of living increases is affecting everybody, and their ability to pay these voluntary contributions is going to be eroded as we move through, you know, what is now predicted to be 10% inflation. In other words, you know, working people are going to be one-tenth worse off during this year because of the cost of living crisis.
Okay, yesterday on Kildare Focus, Ciara spoke to Barnardo's National Policy Manager, Stephen Moffat. Here's what he had to say.
From what we've been seeing over the last number of years, and it's certainly coming through again this year, probably even more so, is that actually parents are being hit by both. So they're being hit by school book costs, but they're also being hit by digital tools. So parents might get a list of school books they have to purchase, but then they've also got to get, particularly as you mentioned, children coming into secondary school, having to get iPads, laptops, having to buy licenses for different digital tools. Some books might have gone online. And obviously that's compounding financial pressures for parents. You know, we have parents who are telling us they're having to try and fork out over €500 for an iPad for a child going into first year. €500 they just don't have, but they don't want their child to go without, so they're trying to find that money from somewhere, which might mean that they're cutting back on other essentials. So we know that some schools are doing their utmost, making sure that there's an affordable option, that parents aren't having to fork out huge sums come every summer to meet uniform costs. But there are schools where, you know, that would be considerably higher. Again, we know that there's a simple solution to this. There's so many affordable uniform options out there. Schools just need to implement that. They need to be bringing it in to make sure that parents aren't put under financial pressures. We know that some schools are compelling parents to fork out an extra €100 a year on PE-branded kits. Just don't think that's acceptable at the moment. The school should be making sure that all children have an affordable uniform option that's non-branded, that if there is a crest involved, that it can be iron on, to make sure that all children have the same access to uniforms. So if they're, you know, during the course of a year, they do rip their uniforms, the parents don't feel financial pressure.
Yeah, Stephen Moffat there, policy manager with Bernardo, speaking on Kildare Focus yesterday. And if we go back to you, Michael Gillespie of the Teachers Union of Ireland, what would you say to what Stephen had to say on the programme yesterday? Because while voluntary contributions, as we mentioned, may come from a shortfall in funding and it's not available to all schools, I get that. But when it comes to school books and uniforms, is there not something that schools can do to reduce the pressure on parents?
Well, I mean, yes, I would agree with Stephen there that we should use the generic uniforms where possible, you know, and also the added cost, we'll say, of digital technology to schools now has added a certain layer, but that should be free to all students. We saw in the pandemic, for example, where we had students in the early days were depending on mobile phones to access online classes. You know, that should never have happened. All students should be treated equal. So just because one family can afford it and another can't, we call that, during the pandemic, the digital divide. These should be standard equipment available to all students. For, as going back to how we started this, it should be free access to all students. All children in the country under 18 years of age should be treated equally. Equal access to all.
Okay, I note as well yesterday, Michael, that you said there was a chronic underfunding in the school system, and there has been for a number of years. What do you mean by that, and how can this be alleviated or changed?
Well, if you go back to, we'll say, the removal of post-responsibility in schools, that left a deficit in, we'll say, pastoral care for students, where post-responsibilities were cut during the last recession and never have been replaced. These are key roles in supporting students, you know, year heads, you know, people who run extracurricular activities, etc. All those cutbacks have affected schools. We also have a chronic shortage of teachers. Why do we have a shortage of teachers? Now, there's a whole range of room, too big a classes, and that's because we've got an underinvestment in school allocations. We have teachers who have getting better options both in the private sector and in other jurisdictions. So we will have schools in September that won't have teachers. And that's because there's a two-tier pay system, which we're trying to solve by giving up 1% of our pay rise this year. Teachers gave the 1% to try and, you know, solve the problem not created by ourselves, but by cutbacks that were, you know, are 12 years old now nearly at this stage. So we have a whole series of underinvestment, and it's never been replaced. We haven't caught up with the cutbacks that we had in 2009, 10, 11 in the last recession. And now we're moving possibly into a new recession and certainly a cost of living crisis with an underfunded education system, the biggest class size in Europe, trying to move forward with a first-class education system that that is underfunded and overly dependent on volunteerism and you know, even voluntary contributions and fundraising in schools.
Okay, and just finally then, Michael, and to kind of bookend this conversation back to where we started in terms of affordability, and I note that the government issued a circular in 2017 stating that schools should make an affordable option available to parents, and also uniforms didn't need to be crested or branded. Bernardo saying that that needs to be implemented. So 5 years on from when that circular was issued in 2017, it would appear that some schools are not following those rules.
Yeah, I think there are some schools that, by tradition, are not following them. But the vast majority of schools, I think, like in the DESH sector, in ETBs and community schools, are following that. But I think the schools that aren't should be, you know, advised to do it as soon as possible. You know, things are only going to get worse, I suppose, with this crisis. People who thought they had no financial problems will more than likely be facing financial problems with the, you know, the inflation we're experiencing at the moment. So I think more and more families will be struggling come September.
Okay. On that note, General Secretary of the Teachers Union of Ireland, Michael Gillespie, thanks for joining us.
Kildare Today. With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare
KFM. Angela has been in touch on the WhatsApp to say, well said, TUI's Michael Gillespie, in quotes, equal access for all. She says voluntary contributions are supposed to be just that, voluntary. And that is Angela. Thanks for that message. Could you please wish Mary McNally in Carna Cottages in Suncroft a happy birthday? That comes in from Andy and Patricia. So Mary McNally, a very happy birthday to you. And finally, before we go to Kira Elizabeth, says, try getting a taxi at any price in a Thai at the weekend. I was quoted 2 hours wait last Saturday at around midnight, and 2 weeks earlier my daughter was quoted a 1.5 hour to 2 hours wait at 11 o'clock. It's crazy, says Elizabeth. Keep those messages coming in to us, Kira.
Now, Barry Doyle does join me. He's the head of hospital services with the Irish Blood Transfusion Service. Hello, Barry.
Hi, Kira. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you for joining me. Unfortunately, I have spoken to the IBTS quite a lot over the past 6 months, I believe, in particular, in regards to blood donations and supply levels being low. They are low again, unfortunately, Barry. I know we're going to speak about the clinic that is open in Naas. We'll briefly touch on that. But I guess the question is, why are they continually so low?
We've had a tough few months, all right. It's been tough since April last year, in reality, and that's pretty much par for the course for all blood services. There's a large impact from COVID, where hospital activity is high now, in that blood usage in the hospitals is quite high, especially hospitals catching up for some lost time, and it's still affecting our donations. Now, at the moment, you know, the challenges can change. At the moment, we're in summer holiday season, and just donor availability can be impacted by that. In general, going back to schools is always a challenging time. So really, the ask on our behalf is for donors who are available in the coming weeks. And we have a number of clinics coming up. We're in Naas this week, but we're also in Kildare Town next week. The week of the 15th, we're in Maynooth and Clane. The week after that, we're in Athy, Newbridge, and then Kilcullen. So it's not a one-off thing. It's in the coming weeks and going back to school. We're asking for people, if they can donate, to please make the effort to do so. But we're actually, it is tight. Activity is high, but we're not doing too bad. And it really depends on the blood group as well. Now, we do need all blood groups.
So what is particularly low at the moment?
Yeah, so it's usually the D-neg blood group. So that's O-neg, you know, B-neg, especially at the minute, and also A-pos.
Okay, they're just rarer, are they?
They are rarer, yeah. The D-neg blood groups are rarer. The O-neg, A-neg, B-neg are rarer, and they're more in demand. So you might have heard O-neg is known as the universal donor. So
yes,
it can be given to anybody. It covers emergency surgeries, most neonatal transfusion, certain patient categories require more O-neg than others, so that's just standard for blood transfusions, that the D-negs are required more than they are available in the population.
So you noted, obviously, there's clinics coming up, but this week there's a clinic operating at the Monreed Community Centre over at Maudlands Avenue in Naas. It's from 3:45 in the afternoon until 8 o'clock each evening. Now, the clinics, just to remind people, they're by appointment only. If you want to book an appointment for the clinic happening in Naas at the moment, the free phone number is 1800 731 137. The ibts.ie website, you can find out more details about donating, Barry, and things have changed slightly, so people may be surprised that they can now donate, or because of the changes they can donate. So the advice is to get onto the website and check out that kind of questionnaire form. It's very simple.
Absolutely, yeah. So our regular donors will get a text from us with the number to call, etc. And then for first-time donors or people who haven't donated in quite a while, go to the website. There is an online quiz. It's just a quick quiz that you can take to see if you're eligible. And then you can phone the number if you are eligible to make the appointment. We do recommend that donors make an appointment. It works very well for us and it works for donors. And we do accept walk-ins, or we try to accommodate walk-ins as best we can. But we recommend that they make the appointment in advance.
Okay, Barry, we appreciate your time this morning. That is the head of hospital services with the Irish Blood Transfusion Service. Supply levels are low for certain blood types, as Barry did touch on, but there is a clinic operating today and tomorrow. That's at the Monreed Community Centre over on Maudlands Avenue in Naas, 3:45 to 8 o'clock each day. Now, the services does advise donors, eat something before you go in, have plenty of cold drinks and fluids in your system before giving the blood. It does note that people should allow an hour and a half to complete the process at the clinic, and if anybody feels unwell after making a donation or think they may be coming down with an infection, you can call obviously your doctor, but contact the IBTS also. That number is 01 432 800, and of course the upcoming clinics in the county we will also touch on closer to the time. Owen.
Now, the company behind a €100 million solar farm near Punchestown Racecourse has praised Kildare County Council for its commitment to renewable energy despite dozens of local objections. Dublin-based firm Strategic Power Projects Limited has been given the green light for the 35-year facility on 129 hectares at Swordlestown off the Naas to Ballymore Eustace Road. And Paul Carson is Managing Director of Strategic Power Projects Limited. He joins us now. Paul, good morning. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Owen.
This sounds like a massive project, and it's going to be a huge facility if all goes ahead.
It's certainly a large-scale project, Owen, and that's where the energy business needs to be at these times in the climate emergency. And with all of the targets that the government has for driving us towards the 80% of renewable energy by 2030, we do need to be developing projects at large scale if we're going to go any way towards meeting those targets.
Now, you claim the solar farm could produce enough power to provide clean energy to 20,500 homes in the area, but Kildare County Council's planning department has received over 100 objections from local residents as well as the equine industry. If we take some of these concerns from people in the area individually, Paul, and just go through them, perhaps you could address them. The equine industry, first of all, we had the Irish Thoroughbred Breeders Association on the programme earlier in the week, and I know Punchestown Race course also have grave concerns about the impact that, for example, noise pollution could have, and that this is going to be built on prime agricultural land for horses. What would you say to the equine industry, first of all, in particular?
Yeah, certainly. So I listened with interest to the piece on Monday morning, and I think it's clear to say that the representative wasn't actually able to give you any impact that solar panels or a solar farm would have on the equine industry. He did mention the loss of land, but the land that we are siting this farm on is not actually used for horses. It's just in ordinary agricultural use. And I think it's clear to say that there is no demonstrated harm to any equine or bloodstock interests. And I suppose, you know, if you go back to the Punchestown statement, that statement that was used on Monday actually referred to the original planning submission. And we engaged considerably with Punchestown and with numerous neighbours in the vicinity. And we took on board a lot of their concerns. We had a request for further information from the council. We addressed all of the points that were raised by the council, and we made a substantial reduction in the size of the project, and we took on some design considerations which we believe alleviated those concerns, and that's what resulted in the council having the confidence to approve the project. And so I would suggest that Punchestown Racecourse would have reconsidered their position, and the statement that was used on Monday might not be their up-to-date position.
Right. What about the issue of noise pollution, not only for horses, for example, but for people in the area? I know solar farms themselves don't produce noise, but obviously the construction will. How long do you envisage, if all goes ahead, that this construction would take?
Yes, certainly. So construction is a temporary issue, and it's a short-term matter, which we would be expecting to take around 6 months on a site of this scale. But of course, we aim as a company to be very good neighbours, both during construction and in operation. And there'll be a local liaison manager who will deal with the local community and each individual resident to ensure that they'll be caused as little inconvenience to the neighbours as possible.
Okay, and on that note then as well, Paul, traffic going in and out of the area, you'll know, having visited the site, that Sordleton is a rural townland. The roads themselves are quite narrow. People would have concerns around the Ballymore area, Two Mile House, Kilcullen, Punchestown, about, you know, getting around those areas if they use it for commuting. What can you say? Will there be a number of road closures? Will people be able to get around freely, or is that going to cause disruption for those 6 months?
No, there's no anticipated road closures. I mean, that might be the case with a wind farm development and what have you, where you're bringing in large pieces of equipment such as the blades or the masts. But we have carried out extensive roads surveys. We have a very detailed traffic plan for the time of construction. And that has been presented to the roads department within the council, and clearly the roads department is satisfied with what we have presented to them in the construction plan, and they don't have any objections. And, you know, that goes to all of the reports which made a part of our planning application. We carried out very detailed surveys and have a very detailed design, which we believe is sensitive to the local environment, the local landscape. And of course, you know, we have to bear in mind that Kildare County Council, as the competent planning authority, have considered in detail all of our reports as part of the planning application, and they have no concerns on the application, and that's why they have gone ahead and issued the notice to grant.
And local historians in the area, Paul, they've also said that there were several historical monuments in the area, such as megalithic standing stones that are there for 4,000 years. It's a very important area in terms of our local history here in Kildare. Can you give confirmation that this landscape won't be interfered with?
Well, again, as part of our team on the planning application, and he's a long-standing member of our team, is what we would consider to be the leading archaeologist in Ireland. He is a key advisor on our team. We have designed the scheme taking into consideration all elements, including landscape and matters of archaeology and interest. And it's important to note that the council's heritage officer has no objections to our scheme, and they are the person of knowledge in the area, if you like. So when we have satisfied the heritage officer and the council, we are more than content that the site is acceptable.
Okay, just a couple of final points then before we let you go, Paul. Describe to us once again what this area will look like, what you envisage the facility will look like. A total of 51 electrical transformer units are going to be built on the site, as well as a number of solar panels as well. As I mentioned from the outset, it's going to be quite a large development, is it not?
Yes, indeed. But actually, this is a very well-screened site, and I suppose that solar is really in its infancy in Ireland, and the public aren't really familiar with what a large-scale solar farm looks like. I mean, we have offered to take people to see solar farms that have been developed in Northern Ireland, some of which you actually drive past and don't realise are even there. But, you know, whenever it comes to it, And we are in a climate emergency. And Minister Ryan, only as recently as yesterday, said that the state will seek to accelerate the rollout of solar. This is something that the country needs. You know, the Repower EU statement that came out just about 2 months ago, it said that renewable energy projects must be fully permitted within 12 months, such as the climate emergency, and that renewable energy projects are to be considered as overriding public interest. So we have to get away from the localising of objection here and concentrate on what the country needs in its energy security of supply, in energy pricing, in reducing the emissions from gas-fired generation. There is a very big picture that our company is playing its part in and helping the country to deliver on.
Okay, so what happens now going forward? I'm sure it'll kind of go out and be up for objections if necessary or appeals if needs be. But at the moment, planning permission has been granted from Kildare County Council.
Yes, indeed. And we would be hoping to submit the site to the grid connection process in September. All going well, that's the next stage in the process. It would be very unfortunate, going back to those national targets and the national interest, if a third-party appeal was to be lodged. This site would be knocked back by, I'm sure, 12 to 18 months. But the site will be built. There's no question about it. It's a very carefully chosen site. It meets all planning and environmental requirements as set down by the council policy. So anything that would be put in our way here is simply time delay, but not that the project won't happen in principle, as it will be built.
Okay, that's Managing Director of Strategic Power Projects Limited, Paul Carson. We spoke to the Irish Thoroughbred Breeders Association on the programme on Monday. The invitation was extended to the local community group out in Punchestown and also Punchestown Racecourse also. And the lines of communication remain open for them. But we do appreciate Paul Carson taking the time out to come on and address those issues. Planning permission has been granted for that solar farm in Swordlestown near Punchestown Racecourse. And Paul, thanks for joining us on the programme this morning.
Thanks, Owen.
Okay, and we will, of course, keep on top of this issue as it develops over the next few weeks and indeed months. Now, just before we take a break, TUSLA, the Child and Family Agency, noted the publication of a HICWA inspection report for child protection and welfare services in the TUSLA, Dublin South West, Kildare and West Wicklow service area. The focus of this inspection was on the children listed on the Child Protection Notification System, who are subject to a child protection safety plan and aligned governance arrangements in place to ensure effective and timely service delivery to these children. Of six standards assessed, five were found to be compliant or substantially compliant, and one standard was found to be non-compliant. And Ciara, just tell us a little bit more about this inspection itself and what it found.
So the inspection found that the Dublin South West, Kildare West Wicklow service had effective leadership, governance and management arrangements in place, which ensured that children identified as at ongoing risk of significant harm received a consistent, good quality service. Further to this, the inspection also found that the experienced senior management team were focused on driving continuous service improvement and promoted a culture of strong child-centred practice with effective engagement of families and partner agencies. All children on the CPNS, that is the Child Protection Notification System, had an allocated social worker. Children who spoke with inspectors gave positive accounts of their experience of the Child Protection Service, and the majority of children felt that their lives had improved because of the social worker's involvement with their family. The report also noted areas where improvements were required. In particular, inspectors noted that the service area's governance and capacity had not been sufficient resourced, and there were a number of vacancies on the team. While the situation was not satisfactory, the management team have implemented plans to ensure levels of resource better match demand and addressed ongoing challenges in workloads.
Now, Audrey Warren, the area manager for Dublin South West, Kildare and West Wicklow with TUSLA, said this inspection report points to the excellent work and commitment shown by TUSLA staff in this area day on day. We are pleased that the area was found by inspectors to have good levels of
compliance and are aware that we have further work to do. We have developed a plan clearly detailing the actions for improvement and are working hard to implement this to enable a better experience for the children and young people in our services and the families that engage with us. Tuzla receives consistent and robust regulation and oversight by various external bodies, including HICWA. This oversight assists us in ensuring that our practices deliver good quality and appropriate interventions and services for children and families.